Well, they're called purple martins, but these birds are primarily black-bodied with dark purple accents, and they are listed as special concern by the Wisconsin DNR, and they are near and dear to our next guest's heart. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. With us, Russ Hefty. Russ has spent 25 years as conservation supervisor at the City of Madison Parks. He is a volunteer mentor for the Purple Martin Conservation Association and the Wisconsin Purple Martin Association. And we'll talk with him about the status of purple martins and what we can, maybe you and I can all do to help out here and save and protect these birds. And I hope you'll join in. Give us your thoughts and efforts to support purple martins, perhaps, or tell us what you do to help them. You can join in at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Russ Hefty, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
So how did you get so interested in purple martins?
Well, like a lot of people, my first interest happened when I was a child growing up. When I was 8 years old, my dad saw a magazine article and instructions how to put up a multi-compartment house for purple martins. He built it. We put it up. And for a number of years, we had purple martins, and I had fond memories of that. I even, at the time, kept a little journal that I wrote and about my purple martins when I was 8, 9, 10 years old. And a few years ago, my dad found that journal hidden in a desk in the basement. I knew I did it, but I was really pleased to find it again.
I bet you were. Well, as we think about purple martins, talk a bit about their habits and where we can find them in the state.
Well, they're really a rather unusual bird. There's actually three subspecies of purple martins. The ones that people are most familiar with is the eastern one. It's the biggest one. And that population is 100% dependent on humans providing housing for them.
It's unbelievable.
It's actually interesting. That tradition started centuries ago with several Native American tribes in southeastern United States. They'd put up gourds. We don't know exactly why they did that. Maybe the martins are pretty territorial. They live in colonies. Maybe they chased away the crows that were going to go after the meat they were drying or go after their vegetables in their gardens. But they formed this partnership. And then when the Europeans came, they started building fancy houses. And so it's become a partnership. Like now, they're 100% dependent on humans.
Yeah, that's an amazing thing. These purple martin houses, which are fantastic to see.
Yeah, I mean, you can spend $1,500 for a house that goes on an aluminum pole, or one other thing that people use is these plastic gourds. Or down south, they still use a lot of natural gourds because they kind of carry down the tradition of the native tribes down there. And so it just depends. Like a lot of hobbies, you can get as involved as you want, spend a lot of money, or you can kind of get started on the cheap until you get the birds, because it's not guaranteed that putting up a house is going to get you a bird.
Bill in Appleton has a question for you. Let's just go there. Hi, Bill.
Hey, I was being dive bombed while I was mowing my lawn by birds. I thought they were coming after me. The lawn was a little long, and there were moths coming up or something that looked to me like moths, and the birds were picking them off. Could that have been purple martins?
Probably not likely. The purple martins tend to feed at a higher elevation. They'll be several hundred feet up in the air. They're going after migrating bugs and dragonflies, damselflies. So they feed at a higher elevation than your barn swallows and tree swallows.
So more likely a tree swallow then.
Probably. That would be my guess.
Oh, there you go.
Not impossible, but it's not as likely.
Okay, there you go, Bill. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. So, you know, the question is, why the heck are they totally dependent on our own, you know, human-built houses?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. Once that tradition started, and they obviously felt an advantage to it, and then the other thing is that they used to historically nest in old woodpecker holes, because they're not an excavating bird. And, you know, we came in here, we cleared out the woods. What do people do for firewood? They take down the dead trees, which hurts the woodpeckers, and also then the purple martins. And the other thing that happened is back in the late 1800s, we unfortunately introduced two very nasty enemies of the purple martins and any cavity nesting bird, the house sparrow and the starling, which are death to purple martins. If you're going to be a purple martin landlord, that's the term we use, you're going to have to be willing to do that battle to not allow those other two species to overtake and outcompete the martins that you're trying to promote.
Yeah, and that's a problem because they want to come in and nest in those houses too.
Yeah, fortunately, over the last number of years, they've developed what they call starling-resistant entrance holes, SREHs, that have been designed so that the purple martin can shimmy down there with their shorter legs, but the big fat starling with longer legs, if that hole is placed properly, will exclude those. So then you just have to fight the sparrow. So there has been some progress made.
Oh, man. I tell you what. Bob in Madison's going to have a question relating to that, I'm pretty sure. And again, you can join 800-642-1234. So where are they again? And are they found across the state or probably wherever there are purple martin houses, perhaps?
Well, yeah, they're found where there's purple martin houses, and they're more common near areas where there's wetlands and lakes and rivers, but because they eat a lot of insects that come from aquatic marshland areas. But their population, not just in Wisconsin, but in the northern tier states, has been declining. And once you have a big black hole where there's no martins, they only spread maybe 25 to 30 miles from where they were born. So then once you've withdrawn that population and they're gone, it's much harder to then recover them and bring them back to the areas.
Let's go to Bob in Madison. Bob, thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry and Russ. The European starlings have put in their reappearance in our yard. They're not my favorite. Do they compete with the purple martins? And Russ, any suggestions on what to do to discourage them?
Well, yeah, they compete for nesting spots. So what you can do is you can use these starlet-resistant entrance holes that are designed to physically exclude the starlings from there, and that way you can separate them out. I mean, some people that live in rural areas, they'll take their pellet gun to them. The Amish have their kids use them as target practice for them or the sparrows. But if you want purple martins, you can't allow any starlings to nest in the vicinity of where you're trying to have the martins.
Okay. And so this is there a design online that you can see for this special hole
place? Yeah, there's a number of different designs. There's one called the Excluder. There's one called the Crescent. There's one called the Conley 2. So there's a number of different designs that people have come up with. Some of them are patented. A good resource to find out more about purple martins in general is to go to the Purple Martin Conservation Association website. They're a wealth of information to help people learn about purple martins and how to preserve them and how to get started if you want to take up the cause.
Bob, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. So, considered... I'm trying to remember
special
now.
Concern.
Special concern. What does that mean, by the way?
That means that if things continue on the current trend, like your previous guest talked about the decline of birds, they would drop down into the threatened list.
Okay.
That's the next step on the downward slide if we're not proactive to try to help these birds at this point in time.
Is this true of other states as well? Are other states having similar issues?
It seems to be typically in the northern states, like out east, in the northern end of the range, and that they don't really know 100% what's going on.
Well, it's interesting that they're a problem. I mean, they're not a problem. We're probably, it sounds more like we are a problem, and I guess back to what purple martins did before humans, it was they lived in these woodpecker holes.
Correct. Yep. The eastern subspecies lived in that. And then there's two other subspecies that are much, much rare. There's a desert purple martin that nests in old Gila woodpecker holes in the saguaro cactus out in Arizona and Mexico. And then there's another species that goes in the mountain ranges out west and, again, nests in old woodpecker holes. But those populations are measuring a few thousand. There's still several million of the purple martins, the more common eastern subspecies, that are still alive today. And they seem to be more common down south, where people will put up gourd racks where they're taking care of 300 to 400 gourds and fighting the sparrows and doing their deal and doing nest checks to see if there's problems with disease and insects. So people really get dedicated to these birds.
Yeah, that's amazing. And they eat, they really eat a lot of insects.
And they do. And to clear up the most common misnomer that was started by a guy who was building purple martin houses back in the 60s, a guy by the name of J.L. Wade, their mosquito diet is almost zero. He came up with this idea to sell his birdhouses that they could eat up to 2,000 mosquitoes a day. And I hear people all the time, you know, still carrying forth that knowledge, which isn't accurate. Today, with genetic analysis and analyzing the bird feces, they've proven that it's less than 5%. So they go after the big bird, big things like the dragonflies and damselflies and butterflies, not some puny little mosquito.
Okay. Russ Hefty with us today, and he'll be with us right up until 12:30, as a matter of fact. Talking with him today about purple martins here in Wisconsin, what's being done. I'm glad to see Celia and Madison joining in. And you can join in, too. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Excuse me. We'll take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Russ Hefty. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining in today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here as we talk about the purple martin. We're hearing from Wisconsinites who are working hard to help them succeed. And our guest knows a lot about that. Russ Hefty spent 25 years as a conservation supervisor at City of Madison Parks. He's a volunteer mentor for the Purple Martin Conservation Association and the Wisconsin Purple Martin Association. So as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in. What do you wonder about purple martins? Let us know. Maybe which Wisconsin bird do you care about? Maybe you have a purple martin house. How's that been going? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Or email to ideas@wpr.org. Ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call. Celia in Madison, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm fascinated by the whole topic of birds late in life. But in elementary school in Oregon, I remember our teacher taking us on a walk and where she pointed out the different kinds of trees in a small park in downtown. But all through elementary school, I learned nothing about birds. There was nothing in any class. So are there classroom programs for children? Could schools build purple martin houses of their own?
I'm not aware of any programs. I know that down south, the PMCA, the Purple Martin Conservation Association, has worked with schools because their birds come back from South America earlier, so they can complete their life cycle while school is still in session. Unfortunately, here in Wisconsin, if you're going to have a program where they had a house to monitor, you'd have to transition from the end of the school term in the spring and have someone willing to do something in the summer session, because you can't just abandon the birds. So that's one of the things that's staying in the way of having a program like that in the northern states, just the life cycle of birds and ours get started later.
Yeah, and I was trying to think of, just to get away from purple martins for a minute, if there are other bird programs for schools that you may know of.
Well, potentially, if they have the right habitat. There's a lot of people that put out, there's a very active Purple Martin Society in Wisconsin. They could put out bluebird houses. There are people that the Audubon Society has been really big on promoting kestrels. So mm-hmm. putting out kestrel boxes if you have an open area that they could hunt over. So there are some other opportunities out there, I think.
Celia, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You mentioned South America, and that reminds me we ought to talk about how the birds' lifespan goes.
Yeah, so they come here in Wisconsin. Usually, there's a few here that they're here already, and the birds that come first, they call them scouts. But they really don't scout. It just means the older birds come first. They bred before. and they'll come. And then the birds that were born in the nest last year will come later. And they'll come starting in May and could come as late as the end of June and still nest. Then by the end of August, they're starting to head for South America. And they roost in a number of areas there down in South America. It's a long journey. Some of them might go as far as 4,700 miles from their winter grounds to their breeding grounds.
So, and what's the situation like in those grounds in South America?
Well, we all know about the Amazon and how that's getting destroyed as they level it. I just recently learned something about the number of impoundments that are on the upper reaches of the Amazon. It's over 100 dams. And apparently it has an unintended effect that there is natural mercury in the environment down there, besides the mercury they're adding through their gold operations, mm-hmm. mine operations. And somehow with those impoundments, that mercury that's trapped in the sediments, it metabolizes into a more deadly form of mercury, which then comes out of the impoundment, gets caught up into the aquatic plant community or animal community, things like dragonflies and other insects that complete part of their life in the water, comes up in the air, the unsuspecting martins, they eat an insect that's got mercury in it, and if they found that if they accumulate too much mercury in their body, it inhibits their ability to build up the proper fats of stores of fat to be able to make their way back to Wisconsin. So that's a big issue down there.
Tom in Muscadet has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. Enjoying the show. I've been putting up gourds in our small prairie for 15 years or more, and they were originally purchased by a club at school. The only thing I've gotten over the years are a lot of swallows and the occasional sparrow, which I didn't really take out. It's a crank up in the middle of the prairie. It's not close to people, which I understand they do like. But do I have to have a call that's broadcast to draw them in, or are there any in the River Valley, the Wisconsin River Valley?
Maybe where in the Wisconsin River Valley are you?
Muscadet?
Muscadet, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
This is located 100 yards maybe from the river.
Yeah, I've heard of those being in that area. In fact, last fall I visited an Amish farmer to the northeast of Fenimore, only about 4 miles from the Wisconsin River, who had a pair of birds there. But, yeah, they do tend to like to be near people. And you definitely improve your odds. They aren't very prevalent in the southwestern part of the state. So by having one of those, either a CD or you can buy this machine called a Songbird Magnet that you can play that makes what's called the dawn song of the Purple Martins, the song that they make early in the morning. I know the first time that I turned mine on at my house, I had a martin fly down right next to it within 10 minutes. Doesn't guarantee they're going to nest there, but it brought them out of the sky. That's the first part of the battle, is to have them check you out.
Wow, interesting. Tom, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, before we get too far along here, I do want to sort of promote the Nature Fest, Bird and Nature Fest that's going on in the Madison area coming up this Sunday.
Yeah, that's going to be at Warner Park. So I'll be there having some information and showing some different styles of Purple Martin housing. There'll be people there with information about bluebirds. There's going to be a group that does rehabilitation with raptors, that people will see those. They'll do a release of a raptor that's ready to go after they've been rehabilitated, and all sorts of activities for kids, you know, from noon to 4 p.m. on Sunday. Come out and enjoy birds at the Crayon Building Shelter at Warner Park.
At Warner Park.
At Warner Park, right by the lagoons.
Right by the lagoons. Okay, so that's, I wanted to make sure we mentioned that, because I bet you're going to get a bunch of people there. What about community and volunteer efforts?
Well, there have been more efforts where people to, say you have a location and you can't accommodate the birds in your yard because you live in a woods. They are an open territory bird. And so what people are doing is getting permission to put them in public spaces. You know, I've been trying for 7 years in my yard. I still don't have purple martins, even though I have 5 houses, 2 of them that I made myself. So I happen to be on the Village of Belleville's Wildlife Resource Committee. So I brought to the committee the idea of putting up a house in the community park, because I'd heard that back in the 70s, they used to have a purple martin house. So the committee agreed. We had the money. I went up and drove up to to Dalton to purchase it from an Amish family. We put it up in 2021. The first year we had 5 pairs. Last year we had 16 pairs. So I'm the one who monitors. I'm the caretaker. I'm the landlord for that colony in Belleville. They're right between the river and the lake.
Oh, man.
It's right down the first baseline.
That's a great story. And you mentioned the Amish, and the Amish have done a lot, have they not, for purple martins? And I'm wondering why.
Well, I'm not sure. I've asked them. Maybe they just picked it up from the Native nations that were here, and for the same practical reasons. I know that not every Amish person is interested in martins, but the ones who are dedicated. I mean, I've met people in southwestern Wisconsin where I've been doing these surveys to try to drum up support for the purple martins and locate them that come from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. They bring their purple martin houses with them. They're serious. And so I'm doing whatever I can to provide them with educational materials and an encouragement so that they can be successful.
I understand that by wearing a particular hat, you accidentally started a citizen science project last summer. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I have a habit of, I like to go to auctions. So I went to an auction out south of Judah. I had on, I think, the same hat I got in the studio today, PMCA hat. And you have to go get a number before you can, you know, bid on auction items. And the auctioneer was in the truck and said, "Hey, I've got purple martins at my place." And so I had to go on my business. He's busy, you know. And so I got home and I looked on the Wisconsin Breeding Bird Atlas and searched for purple martins to see if there were purple martins that had been noted during the last survey in his area. Zero purple martins in his area. So then I followed up with a phone call, and he told me that, oh, my son has them too, and the guy in the winery nearby has them, and then some folks in Argyle might have them, but he wouldn't give me any specific information. So I decided one day I was just going to drive up to Argyle, or down to Argyle, or across to Argyle. It's only 800 people. I figured I could drive around town, and shouldn't be too hard to find a purple martin house. And I'm driving around, and I'm finding these old, neglected houses full of sparrows and everything except what I'm looking for. And then finally, I stopped at the convenience store on the way out of town, and I asked if, does anybody have purple martins? Oh, yeah. Carol Lancaster, just 2 blocks away, behind the old lumberyard. Go talk to her. And before I even turned the corner to see the gourd racks, I heard the birds. So I knew I was in the right place.
And so that led to sort of a little citizen science project then.
Yeah, I it's like she gave me a tip that she told me that her and her husband were driving around somewhere north of Broadhead 10 years ago and had found purple martins, but she couldn't remember exactly where it was. So I drove around and drove around, and then I drive around one Sunday, and I saw these group of kids like sitting in the middle of the road practically. So I pulled up alongside them, and I just asked them, you know, what they were doing. And then I said, it was Amish kids, because the church had been on the farm just right nearby. And so I asked, you know, anybody has purple martins? Oh, yeah. Mr. Detweiler, Mark Detweiler, he's got them. And so I went, and they gave me the directions. I went there, and he had 6 T14 houses and poles between his house and his dairy barn where he does organic milk. And then I found his brothers had them, his dad has them. So with that one little tip by those kids sitting in the road, I found some birds.
Rusty in Dalton, Wisconsin. We'll give you a chance. Hi, Rusty.
Oh, hi, Larry. Excuse me.
It's all right.
All of a sudden, I have turmoil. It was mentioned that there's a Amish fellow in Dalton who makes martin houses, and I know exactly who that is. And he makes very nice ones, that, including the pole and the pulley system to crank them up and down and all that sort of thing. They're not cheap. But I was really considering one, but my neighbor convinced me it isn't worth it because I live in the woods. There are a lot of them around this area. A lot of my neighbors have them, but the ones that are successful are always in open areas, quite open, in fact. My neighbor across the road has a hayfield, but for some reason the martins stay away from that, too. Maybe she's too close to my woods.
Yeah, they want to stay away from woods because The woods is where predators like hawks and owls can hang out. So basically, they want a wide open space, you know, around the house, so they can kind of come in like an airplane and land on the house and not have to do any kind of strange maneuver where they have to drop like a rock to get in there. So, yeah, if you don't have a very open yard, if you're in the woods, unfortunately, you're not a good candidate for purple martins. But you could work with some neighbor or work with a local county park or some way there if you want to try to be involved. Plus, if you can't afford a house, you can buy plans for those T-14s that the Amish man makes, and you can make one yourself. I have a friend that, one of my Purple Martin friends that lives in on the edge of Oregon, Wisconsin, and over the course of four winters, every winter, he built himself a house. And two of them are now in the village of Oregon by a couple of retention ponds, and then the other two are in Dane County Parks. And every Friday, him and his wife go out and tend to their Purple Martins. They're at these public locations using houses that he built using those plans. So you can do it, quote, on the cheap if you are handy and want to do it.
Yeah, there you go, Rusty. Thank you so much for calling. Here's what Amy says. She's sorry to hear that purple martins eat dragonflies. She loves birds and has many feeders and houses, but she hates mosquitoes, and dragonflies eat mosquitoes. So she's not going to be putting up martins, hoping for purple martins anymore.
Well, it's all part of the ecology.
Yeah, it's all part of the ecology. And Ron in La Crosse will give you a chance. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, my mother, we didn't have a clothes dryer years ago in the 50s, early 60s. So mother hung her laundry linen out on an outdoor line. Trouble is, her next door neighbor had a martin birdhouse, and those darn martins, after eating, you know, whatever insects they'd, you know, deposit, came out of them on her laundry, and it made mother so mad. You know, you'd laundry, and now the birds crapped on it.
Well, that's just a good story, Ron. Thanks for calling. Probably doesn't happen as much as it used to because there aren't many clotheslines out there anymore.
Right, and I think the Amish are more tolerant of them because when I'm in my talks with them, I found a family that had purple martins, and by the time I got to them, it was late in the season, and the martins had left for migration. But they told me that they could already tell the difference without the martins, that there were more flies around the barnyard. So there's a very practical reason to have purple martins on a farm. They really will clean up the flies that bother the cattle and you. So they have a useful ecological function there.
I got a listener who wanted to know, and this doesn't relate to purple martins, but it does relate to Bayfield and Bayfield in bloom, which is something that we do every year. So I'm just going to mention that before I forget it, that I will be, well, not only myself, but a lot of us from WPR will be in Bayfield, probably get in the last day of May. And June 1st, we will be broadcasting our program to kick off Bayfield in Bloom on June 1st. And, of course, we'll be hearing more. You'll be hearing more about that as time goes on. But mark your calendar for June 1st for Bayfield in Bloom and Wisconsin Public Radio. So there you go. I wanted to make sure I mentioned that. Somebody else wonders, what work is left in order to improve the condition for purple martins in Wisconsin?
Well, the biggest factor is they need more housing. And they need people who are committed to taking care of that housing. Often people will think, oh, it's kind of a cool thing. They'll put up a house. But if you're not going to tend to it and you're not going to, you know, put up the call device to draw in the birds, and then you give up and it just becomes habitated by starlings and sparrows, you really haven't helped the cause. So we need dedicated people or groups of people that are willing to put up the housing. I think more and more the Wisconsin Purple Martin Association is always – they're trying to document the cases of where people have public colonies, state parks, county parks, so that people know about that and that we can, that if you have a public colony, that means you can expose the general public to these birds. So maybe we'll have the idea that, hey, maybe we could do this at our place to kind of spread the word because they're so more infrequently found in the countryside, these purple martin houses, than they were 50 years ago.
Yeah. So how much effort or, like, you manage You know, you're a manager for Purple Martin Houses. What is all entailed in that?
Well, you have to visit the house on a regular basis, and you design them so that you can lower them down, and you evict the sparrows, and then you follow the young, and so that you know when the eggs are going to hatch. And you monitor for things such as maybe a baby bird died for whatever reason. You remove that so it doesn't stay in the nest cavity in case the adults don't remove it. You check for mites, sometimes the mite population, even though it's an insect that's existed with the martins forever. Sometimes very, very, very high levels can be detrimental to the young. So what the Purple Martin Conservation Association recommends is that you take and you pick out those little baby birds, put them into a little container that's got some pine straw in it, take that old nesting material out of the house. Typically you have like a nesting tray, which makes it easier for you to have sanitation in your house. Empty that out in a bag and take it away from the site, and then put in a batch of fresh new pine straw. Put the little baby birds back in there. The birds are no the worse for the wear. The adults don't care. In fact, the more often that you interact with your martins, the more, quote, tame they get. I mean, they'll never attack me. They recognize me. They know I'm not a threat. Sometimes they'll stay on the eggs that they're incubating all the way down as I lower the house. And I open the house and, oh, one's still in there. And I go, okay, I'm not going to worry about counting the eggs. You just do your deal and we'll get the count later.
So it can become a kind of a cool experience working with them then.
Yeah, you get to see the life cycle.
I mean, there's a little bit of work, but you get to see the whole life cycle.
Oh, yeah, you get to see them from the eggs, and then you see this very, so ugly it's cute kind of thing. The naked birds, with big giant eyes and big giant bills. They're naked. They can't see. And then see how they take on their feathers and start to become more active. And of course, the fun day is when you see them leave the nest cavity and they successfully fly off to join their brothers and sisters and parents and have a new life and head south to South America.
Matt in Madison emailed to say that there's a healthy Purple Martin house in Warner Park, or at least there was, if you want a sure thing about seeing them, at least it was last year.
I wouldn't say a healthy population. There are two pairs there.
But you'll get to see them.
Well, there's no guarantees that those two pair are going to make it back, because the other thing that goes against the Purple Martins is, I had mentioned this before, there's an annual mortality rate of 50% on adult birds. Their average lifespan is slightly less than 3 years. And the young that are born last year, 70% of those will die. So it's a rough life. And then it adds in the fact, like a lot of our insectivorous birds are declining because of all the use of these neonicotinoids, pesticides, which are diminishing the insect population. If an insect-eating bird doesn't have insects, kind of hard to be able to survive and thrive and reproduce.
And I do want to mention again, we've got that Nature Bird and Nature Fest is this Sunday from noon to 4 at
Warner Park, right at the shelter.
Right at the shelter in Warner Park. Russ, great pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Russ Hefty, 25 years as conservation supervisor at the City of Madison Parks. It's great to have him with us to talk about Purple Martins. And thank you for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.